Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, back for our weekly Penn State football podcast with Seth Engel of the Post-Gazette and the Daily Collegian. Seth is back from Atlanta, where Penn State looks not great in the Peach Bowl. Seth, how were your travels, and how are you?
Doing well. It was a fun trip. We were there for about a week. Saw some things and enjoyed my stay, and the game itself was great. Mercedes-Benz Stadium, if you haven't been, is it's pretty spectacular. It's big, it's new. Like, there's a lot of things that I think maybe Pat Kraft might have taken some notes on while he's there for the Beaver Stadium renovations. But you're right, the game didn't play out, I think, the way that many had hoped it would, or maybe expected it would. But there are a couple legs in that. I'm looking forward to breaking that all down with you today.
Yeah, we're going to get into the defense first, Seth, because that was the big, I think, headline for me. I mean, we've seen the offense be inconsistent this season. I don't think it was, major news that they were inconsistent this time. I thought there were some flashes compared to other games this season, especially against a decent team in Ole Miss. But to me, the headline is the defense gets shredded for over 540 yards. And, there were opt-outs. You don't have either of your starting corners. Then, Abdul Carter has to deal with an injury during the game. Obviously, the coordinator is not there, Manny Diaz, so who knows how that affected communication. So you would expect some level of decrease from the dominance we've seen from this defense this season. But I think, 540 yards of offense allowed, that has to be a major disappointment, even if you knew that they were going to have some trouble with this Ole Miss offense.
Yeah, I think in a way we all saw that was, that could be a possibility, where you have a number of guys opt out. Even if Kalen King and Johnny Dixon hadn't announced their intentions, officially before the game, it was assumed that, no matter who was going to the draft or not, like those veteran guys probably weren't going to play that much, which is going to leave the defense in the hands of, some of these freshmen that we saw at corner. It was Cam Miller, who was a sophomore, who manned that number one corner spot. But the other side was really, two freshmen, Elliot Washington and Zion Tracy, who've played this year, but, nothing, really meaningful, especially against a really good receiving core in Ole Miss. I think that did tell a story, but we can talk about this later, later in our chat here. But I think the offense, really kind of messed up the tempo, especially when you're trying to keep the defense off the field and an experienced defense with two freshmen at corner. I just don't think the offense lived up to that at all. And it really kind of threw off, the whole game plan for Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, but that's also been the case all season, Seth. And I think that's my gripe with this performance is you expect a step back. You expect maybe the offense is going to cause some problems, but you don't expect them to kind of be thrown on at will the way that they were. And this is not like a new thing, because I actually went back and did the math on bowl games and how Penn State's performed against, solid non-conference competition. In the last three bowl games against, pretty mid-tier SEC programs, Arkansas, Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl in 2018, and then, of course, Ole Miss this year, they've given up an average of 429 yards. Their last five bowl games, the average is 444 yards. That includes, I think, a 540 yards from Memphis in the Cotton Bowl a handful of years ago. And then obviously last season against Utah, Penn State was in control. I don't know how much stock you put in Utah getting almost 400 yards after Penn State had kind of put the game away. But regardless, those are the numbers, Seth. And, you know, at some point, does that matter at all? Because I look at it and say, it tells me that when you go outside the Big Ten, you play decent teams, you almost always struggle. And yeah, some of those, I think the Arkansas game they played, what was that? Whatever they call the Outback Bowl these days. They had a ton of opt-outs for that game, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a ton of yards to give up for a program that fancies itself on being not just good on defense, but dominant on defense.
Yeah, no, it is, especially this season too, right? Because this was a defense that had dominated, you know, every single game they played. You know, finishing the regular season number one in total defense and sacks, to put up a performance like that where they, you know, they allow 38 points, which is, you know, their season high. But I do think, you know, in many ways it does directly correlate to the opt-outs. When you lose, you know, a dynamic defensive end in Chop Robinson, you lose Kalen King, you lose Johnny Dixon, and the guys who did play, like I said before, like Adisa Isaac and Curtis Jacobs, like they were not playing normal snap counts. You know, this was, it's not like they were playing 100% of the game, and I don't think anyone was expecting that they would. But Penn State was really down on their defensive talent. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair for James Franklin to kind of blame the performance on opt-outs alone, because I think there was more that went into it. I don't know. I think it's just it's interesting, and I think Penn State was probably hit harder in opt-outs than maybe they had before, because this was a team that, you know, James Franklin had kind of prided himself on being a guy who's able to keep guys around and not have them opt out. We saw this season that just wasn't the case.
Yeah, I guess part of my problem with that argument from him, though, too, Seth, is that this is the defense for next season, substantially, right? Yeah. You might get some guys in the portal. You're going to have some freshmen coming in. But, you know, Cam Miller's going to see a lot of time next season. And you know, I think it's a frustration with the way Penn State, you know, as we look forward into this 12-team era, I kind of look at performances like this in the last handful of bowl games, and I say, can Penn State go into those games and have a chance to win? Or – is their defensive rank so inflated by the putrid offenses of the Big Ten? You look at what Iowa went out. That was Penn State's biggest win of the year, now that this is all over. Iowa goes out, lays a total egg against Tennessee. They've been averaging, what, 16 points a game all season? And how many offenses has Penn State seen in the Big Ten that were, you know, maybe not equally as bad, but also very bad? And you know, you look at Ohio State, Michigan, Iowa's defense, they're all ranked very highly, and then they go out in these bowl games, and you can see the trend. They're just not as good. Do we overvalue these defenses to some extent because of the quality of competition that they're exposed to all season, and how, you know, the Arkansas and the Kentuckys and the, you know, the Ole Misses of the world are just better at playing offense than the Indianas and the Illinois and the Wisconsins?
No, I think that's an interesting point. Starting to see that in bowl season, you know, definitely. I think the Big Ten defenses are good. I don't think there's any question about that, but I do agree with you. I think that the sample is, you know, maybe a little skewed. But, you know, I looked at Michigan and Alabama, and I saw, you know, that Michigan defensive line that I had watched against Penn State, and it's you know, it's still a very dominant defensive line that I think the rest of the Big Ten is kind of trying to model themselves in the trenches. It's a defensive line that I think, despite, you know, Washington's kind of offensive prowess and their explosiveness, I think, you know, Michigan still stands the test because of that defense. I think they're able to keep teams in check. And I think that that's kind of been the Big Ten model. You know, I agree that, you know, the offense, pretty much, you know, every team this year, you know, because Ohio State was always that one lone explosive offense. No matter if things were bad, you know, offensively with the rest of the conference, Ohio State was always that explosive team. And now, you know, even they dipped down, you know, this year. So I don't know. I think the sample is a little skewed. I'm interested to see Washington and Michigan, because that's kind of going to signal, like, the Big Ten is going to be a lot different next year when you bring in these explosive offenses from the Pac-12. Just a different style of play, and if that has some kind of trickle-down effect. But, you know, Penn State to be able to keep up with those types of opponents, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the offensive side of the ball this offseason.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm not saying I think Penn State's defense this season was a fraud. I'm not taking this one game with a lot of opt-outs as, you know, this is just what Penn State is. I'm just saying this is Penn State's defense next season. It got shredded by, you know, what, the third-place team in the SEC?
Yeah.
And that makes me question whether, okay, it's a good defense. Is it an elite defense, or is that the part that's skewed? I certainly think if you have this defense at full strength going into that game or a playoff game next season, that you're going to have a good chance to win. It's just a matter of, is Penn State over-relying on the defense to win in this day and age of college football when you go outside, you know, the troglodyte Big Ten in terms of how they approach offense and all of that? And I think that's going to be, you know, a major question as we get to next season is, I think Penn State can get to the playoff. I don't have a lot of concerns about that, even with some of these Pac-12 teams, you know, coming into the fold and shaking things up in the Big Ten. My question is, can you win when you get there? Because I think a lot of the case for why Penn State fans should be excited is, well, you don't have to go through Michigan and Ohio State to potentially win a national championship anymore. You can maybe get some good matchups, get a nice setup where you have to win three games against teams you match up well against, and you win a national championship that way. I think this throws a little bit of a wrench in that narrative because, you know, you see how they perform against teams that have opposite styles from around the country. Seth, I want to get into the receivers because I knew you talked to Higgins, the wide receiver coach. Last thing I'll say on the defense is, you know, do you have faith that a guy like Cam Miller is going to be able to respond? It was a tough game. I think he's going to be good in those games against, you know, because they were complimenting him on the broadcast, pretty technically sound. You know, I think he could be a good corner when you're playing those plotting cornerbacks from some of the Big Ten programs they're going to play. I still have some level of faith that things are not going to be as bad at corner next season as they maybe looked in this game.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, no, I think that the future is bright for Cam. You know, he played as a true freshman too, and then this year took a step up. But he's a guy I think they can use in a Johnny Dixon type of role, where you can use him in blitz packages, which I think is pretty valuable. And unique to have from your cornerbacks, kind of changes the tempo and switches some things up, gives you some different looks. But I don't see him being that type of, you know, Kalen King, maybe lockdown guy, getting a lot of pass deflections. He's just not that type of corner to me. He's a bigger type of guy that I think is going to be able to, you know, kind of fill the box. And I think they can use him in pretty unique ways. What worries me is, you know, that other corner spot, because, you know, Tracy and Washington, I know they're young and they're true freshmen and they looked like it on Saturday. But will they be ready to go to start for a whole Big Ten schedule next year? Not just any Big Ten schedule, but one that features, you know, four more highly competitive programs with explosive offenses like these. The Pac-12, like I said before, very different than the Big Ten on offense. So will, you know, sophomores next year be able to keep up is my question, and maybe they want to target the portal to bring someone else in for that.
Yeah, maybe pick up Storm Duck again.
Yeah, well, he declared yesterday, so he's done. And no, he did not put a Penn State logo on his graphic. UNC in Louisville.
that's funny. Well, let's get into the receivers. I think the big headline for me, Trey Wallace back for the Peach Bowl. I thought he looked pretty good. Granted, some of those catches he made were in garbage time, padded the stats a little bit. But how do you come out of this game, Seth, feeling about him as a potential number? You know, you and I keep talking about Julian Fleming as kind of a thing we think is going to happen. Let's just accept that we think it's going to happen. You're going to have Keandre Lambert-Smith back, you hope. If you have Trey Wallace in that number three role, regardless of who's one or two, how do you feel about him there?
See, I wouldn't be too sure about Keandre coming back. You know, this was a guy that, before we get into Dre Wallace, like Keandre was supposed to be the number one this year. It was no secret in preseason camp. There was the expectation after the Rose Bowl too. And he even said it after the game, cause he had like, what, 183 receiving yards, that long touchdown. It was the longest in Rose Bowl history. And he said, this is a sample for next year. So we all thought, you know, Keandre is going to be the guy, opens up West Virginia, you know, over 100 receiving yards. He was great, blocked in with Aller. And then it kind of all went downhill, you know, especially the past few weeks where Keandre's had, you know, two receptions in like the past four games. And he had one target in the Peach Bowl. Like, remember, this is the number one receiver at the start of the year, finishes in the Peach Bowl with one target, no catches. You know, that's pretty mysterious and a little weird. So I asked, you know, wide receivers coach Marcus Hagans after the game, like, what's going on with Keandre? And, you know, he talked about, you know, kind of, I don't know, depth chart stuff and holding people accountable. No real direct answer, but I asked, you know, like, do you expect him to be back? And basically, you know, that the answer was you can't really control people's decisions. And we will see what happens. So here we are. Dante Cephas declared Wednesday morning. And I, you know, Keandre Lambert-Smith could very well be the next Penn State receiver to enter the portal. So you talk about Tre Wallace being the number one guy next year. You know, they're going to need some help. You know, they're going to need a lot of help. And I don't know if getting those guys out of the locker room might help, because it might have been a culture thing. But you know, it was the receivers were bad this year, and it's not looking like that's, you know, it's looking like that might not improve next year either.
Why don't you think Keandre's already gone? I guess would be my follow-up question then, because, you know, you have that month-long first portal window, and yeah, there's a second one that opens up. So certainly he'll have his chance to move on then. But, you know, you had a month to kind of let marinate on the way he closed with those last three games. Obviously, the Peach Bowl, you can just kind of add to it. But it wasn't like the Peach Bowl was an aberration. I mean, that was pretty much the trend down the stretch, and it just more or less continued. Why do you think he was still here for the Peach Bowl if you know, maybe there's a chance that he moves on?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's possible, like, maybe how NFL draft guys use – like, Daquan Hardy played, like, 90 defensive snaps because he used the Peach Bowl as maybe a springboard to boost his draft stock. Like, I'm not saying this is why Keandre – you know, maybe stuck around, but it's possible that like he could play. And if he has a big game, you know, that boosts his stock in the portal, or he just hadn't made his mind up yet. That's possible too. But you know, I think it's more likely than not that he's gone to start next year, just based on the way that, you know, Hagans kind of talked about it. And then, you know, going up to Keandre in the locker room and him declining comment, you know, arguing with fans on Twitter the next day. I mean, I think it's like a Cephas situation where it might just be best for both parties to just move on, because it's not working out. And I think it's only going to hurt the culture in the locker room.
That'll be an interesting thing to monitor as we go down the stretch here. I guess, so let's talk about this Cephas transfer and, you know, let's talk about Tre Wallace as a possible number one. I mean, do you see it with him? I mean, can you imagine him stepping into that role and maybe being someone who has a breakout season next season? And what does, you know, what does the loss of Cephas, I don't know if it's even the loss, but I mean, what does that teach us about the portal? I guess is the question. Cause to me, it's a matter of, you know, a lot of people talk about the portal, like it's just like a magic cookie jar you can go into and it's a, you know, there's always going to be something for you there. And I don't know that that's necessarily going to be the case, you know, as we move forward in this unrestricted transfer era. I think it's going to be, you know, a matter of just like it is with recruiting. Some guys are going to hit and some guys aren't.
Yeah. See, Cephas was such a weird situation because he seemed like such a good fit. You know, coming from Penn Hills, like he had two high school teammates in Daquan Hardy and Tank Smith already on roster. So, you know, he already kind of knows the team in a way. And he was great at Kent State. You know, he's one of, you know, the better receivers I think they've had in program history, and just could not make the leap with Penn State. And, you know, I don't even think that's necessarily on field. I think a lot of that was, you know, how he practiced and how he prepared and I just don't think he lived up to the expectation that I think James Franklin had for him. And I think it also kind of started when he didn't, you know, early enroll. Like, remember, this is a guy who came in the summer after, you know, a number of freshmen had already enrolled, after, you know, the pretty much the entire transfer class had already been on campus. Cephas kind of, you know, he was there a lot later. So he had a slow start, and I just don't think he ever really picked it up. You know, I think we saw in the Maryland game, oh, like, this guy might be able to do something, you know, with that 2-touchdown performance. And it just did not follow suit. As for Trey Wallace, you know, that's another big question mark this year of, you know, if Trey Wallace is healthy the whole year, what is Penn State's offense, you know, really capable of doing? And for him to be kind of that number one target in the Peach Bowl, I think we saw, you know, maybe a little bit of, you know, what he could be able to do in 2024. With that being said, though, Drew Aller did not complete a pass to a wide receiver until the fourth quarter. So take that as you will.
Yeah, that was ugly. Other than Tyler Warren, and, you know, even Tyler Warren, you know, how much are you inflated with a 77-yard, you know, play? I mean, it's great that you make the play, but in terms of, like, consistent down to down offense, I don't know how much you can take away even from his performance, even though I think it was encouraging as just in terms of he's coming back. He was a guy that was kind of on that fringe that you do get back. A lot of those guys that were on the fringe are going, but you do get him back rather than leaving for the NFL. Let's talk a little bit about Aller. I think he, you know, it was another inconsistent performance where you saw some, you know, I think really good things. I think the offense had some explosiveness in this game that it did not have for much of the season, and I think he had something to do with that. But at the same time, he can't find the receivers. How much of, you know, where we are now do you put on Drew Aller, and how much do you put on these receivers?
Yeah, it was just a bumpy kind of ride for Drew Aller in his first year to kind of look back on. I think that, and we talked about this since the preseason, like, I think the receivers do play a big part in that. Because if you're a quarterback, you know, could you imagine being a young quarterback trying to figure it out in your first year as a starter, and your receivers aren't open? Like, it's just, like, it's so simple. Like, I feel like there's so many legs that kind of go into, you know, crafting a football game plan and getting a quarterback to find success. But what it really comes down to is, like, a wide receiver being open enough for your 6'6 quarterback to just throw it in, make an easy throw. And James Franklin talked about that before firing Mike Yurcich, was putting Drew Aller in a position to just get going. Like, make it simple and get him going. And just Penn State was not able to do that this year, whether it was because of the play calling or whether it was because wide receivers either didn't know the plays or just weren't getting separation. So I put a lot of it on the wide receivers. I do. And I put, you know, a lot of that on Marcus Higgins too, in his first year as position coach. You know, just did not prepare that unit enough to win football games. At the same time, I mean, Drew Aller does not look good at times. Like, he is missing throws that he needs to be making. Like, short passes to Tyler Warren should not be overthrown. There are a number of passes that were thrown over the heads of people, and he just does not have Jahan Dotson over there to pull it down, like Sean Clifford had to kind of bail him out. Just not a pretty season for him at all. Interested to see what kind of happens with Kotal Nicki next year, but there is a lot of work to do.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Seth, it does bother me sometimes when the wise film guys on Twitter, who always take things out of context, they take one play and they're like, look, this is what happens, like, all the time. And they'll show a receiver that Drew Aller missed. And my response to that would be, they're not open every play. And if you can't trust that they're going to be open, it makes it a lot harder to find them when they are. And I think that was the big problem for him, is it was kind of a compounding thing of, did he miss open receivers at times with his accuracy or with even being able to see them at all? Absolutely. Like, you can pull out examples from probably every game of that. On a down-to-down basis, though, as I mentioned before, I don't know that those guys were open enough for him to trust that they'd be open, and I think that messes with a young quarterback's head quite a bit. I think we saw, to a greater extent, I think probably that with Christian Hackenberg late in his career, where – the talent was not there, and that just his confidence was shattered by the guys that he was working with, and the quality of talent that Penn State had on that roster. I'm not saying I think Drew Aller is headed for Christian Hackenberg territory yet. I think it's too early to declare such a thing, but you know, Penn State needs to do work to avoid that. I think you could see it going that situation if you don't find solutions, and hopefully Andy Kotelnicki is the answer for that. Let me ask you this, Drew, or excuse me, Seth. We saw the way Drew Aller played. We saw Bo Prabula come in, throw a touchdown pass, get all fired up, really channeling, like I keep saying this, he keeps feeling like Trace McSorley to me, the way he plays, the way he looks out there, same number. Is there any scenario where there's any kind of competition between these two going into next season? I know a lot of fans want it. I don't think I'm on that bandwagon yet, but I think the question needs to be asked.
Well, you know damn well that James Franklin's going to tell you there is, like he did this whole offseason. You know, I don't think Bo Prabula is going to be the starter next year, but I do think his reps are going to, you know, continue to kind of increase. Andy Kotelnicki's a guy who never shied away from a two-quarterback system at Kansas and actually thrived with it. So I think, you know, Bo Prabula could have a future here. And I think people are kind of questioning, oh, this is going to be another Levis situation or a Tommy Stevens where the backup quarterback, you know, isn't going to be used enough, so they're just going to end up transferring. I think with Bo Prabula, Penn State could pretty successfully run a two-quarterback system. Just under the way that Kotelnicki kind of does things. You know, I think he likes to throw people off guard and keep people guessing. And when you have two quarterbacks, two very different styles, I think that's great for the playbook. Bo's come in and, you know, more or less, I think he's been a little more explosive than Aller. Just granted, you know, kind of the rate at which they're being used. You know, Prabula had the 48-yard touchdown to Singleton. Wasn't necessarily a great throw, and I don't think he has an arm like Trace McSorley. But, you know, he made it work, and it was a touchdown, and I think he does good things for the offense. So I don't think he's going to be the starter per se, but I do think he's going to see an increase in reps next year.
Yeah, I think when you have a guy that can do all that kind of stuff, it's good to find ways to get them involved. Seth, let's get into the running backs briefly. We've talked about them all season. I thought it was a great close for them, the way they played against Michigan State, and I think they did their job against Ole Miss. You know, the play calling that maybe I thought they probably should have run the ball a little bit more than 18 times with Singleton and Allen. Granted, the game script was negative. You're behind, you know, late in the game. You probably don't get as many reps for those guys as you would have if you were winning. I still would have liked to see them get more carries, but they did their job. And they closed strong after a season that was not particularly explosive. How do you feel about where those guys stand as we look toward 2024?
No, I feel great. And I agree with you. They were not used enough at all. You know, those first couple drives with Nick Singleton, that was, you know, some of the best football I think he's played all year, was maybe in those first three drives they had. You know, he had like an 18-yarder, and it took a while to even get him, you know, past 15 yards on a rush. You know, he had 50 yards and eight carries, and then they stopped using him. Like, he finished the game with eight carries when he was on his way to, you know, maybe his best performance of the season. You know, over 6 yards a carry, and you stop using the guy who's, you know, working. And Katron looked pretty good too, and stop using him. So I just don't understand the game plan to go from, okay, we're finding success on the ground. Yeah, we didn't score on that first drive, but, you know, we'll get back there if we keep using the same game plan. It's like, no, we're just now going to, you know, go to our passing game, which has been terrible all year. But, you know, props to Tyler Warren. He had a good game. But, yeah, I do feel good about Singleton and Allen, you know, going into next season. Granted, neither transfers, and I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, I think it's important to make sure you retain those guys.
Seth, I want to circle back to a topic that I kind of brought up. You know, as we evaluate the season as a whole, you know, I don't know how much you really should, you know, include bowl games in grading a season because of the opt-outs. And, you know, starting next season, maybe it's different because the playoff games will count, you know, and you'll presumably have full rosters. But, you know, you had a chance to beat a good team. you know, you have a chance to win a big game and kind of shed that label a little bit, just like you did last season by beating Utah in the Rose Bowl. You don't do it. Is this deflating because of what I mentioned earlier that you know, so much of the optimistic case for Penn State relies on winning games exactly like this, and you didn't do it?
Yeah, I think it is deflating. And you look at the Rose Bowl last year and what that kind of did for the program and got hopes up. And I think it was really healthy to win the Rose Bowl and have the expectation that you're going to make the playoff next year. And it just didn't happen. You know, I think that even going to the Peach Bowl was deflating to not make the playoff in a year where you had a historic defense and it kind of just seemed like the pieces were in place to get it done. And it just didn't happen. So, you know, not only to miss the playoff, but then lose the New Year's Six game that you went to, you know, it kind of sucks for James Franklin, especially as this guy who's, you know, just continuously fallen short. And that would have been the game. Like you mentioned, Iowa was the biggest win this year. That would have been the game to be like, okay, well, we lost to Ohio State and Michigan, but at least we got that Ole Miss win over an SEC team. And it just, you know, it didn't happen. It's a 3-loss team. And this was a season that I think you needed to kind of garner all the momentum that you possibly could gather heading into, you know, a pretty tumultuous 2024 season with a ton of changes.
Seth, what do you make of the Big Ten's bowl season overall? Obviously, you get Michigan and Washington in the championship game, if we're going to count Washington now as a Big Ten team, which I think we do. So you get those two. I think that's the headline. That's the good thing. And maybe that's all that matters, and especially in this era of college football where – because I was at home, Seth, watching the game. You were at the game. I'm just going to go on a mini rant here, and I'm going to finish the point. They talked about the Peach Bowl for less than 90 seconds on the Peach Bowl halftime show. And they talked about the night before the Cotton Bowl with Ohio State. They had Desmond Howard give his like 15-second thoughts on what was happening. And then they were into talking about the playoff again. And it that frustrates me because we talk about why are these bowls devalued. Well, I'd start with ESPN, who has only ever treated these New Year's Six games that are not in the playoff like they're just like every other bowl game. And they use them to set up the playoff, and they don't let them be standalone events, and they don't say, hey, we're going to spend the halftime show talking about what happened in the first half and highlighting the players that made great plays and putting them on a stage that would justify a lot of these opt-out guys playing. ESPN has no interest in that. So, you know, as we look toward, you know, next season, does it only matter that Michigan and Washington won the playoff games, which is where everyone's eyes were driven by ESPN, or does it matter that you know, Iowa plays like crap, honestly, in the Citrus Bowl, that Penn State's defense, you know, doesn't look like it was supposed to look against Ole Miss, that Ohio State, it used to be when they were down to their number three quarterback, you have Cardale Jones coming in to sling 59 points on Wisconsin. Instead, I don't know if I can remember an Ohio State offensive performance nearly that bad as what they you know, did against, you know, Missouri in the Cotton Bowl. What are your thoughts on Big Ten bowl season as a whole?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, you know, because, you know, kind of like you talked about before, maybe it says something about the quality of just the Big Ten offense overall, and that, you know, they've been spoken so highly of for having, you know, these great defenses, but maybe the defenses aren't that great because they're playing these terrible offenses. But on the other side, you know, I think it still matters, you know, and I think the Big Ten is still, you know, a dominant conference, but maybe not as much as it's been in the past. You know, Ohio State is a team that, you know, I would worry about. You know, if I'm an Ohio State fan, that's a team that I feel like is just past its mark. I don't know what they're going to do next year because, you know, I watched that Missouri game. Devin Brown wasn't the guy. And when he was hurt, the other guys they had weren't either, you know, and they haven't been able to bring in a transfer. And at the same time, they've had a number of guys depart. You know, Michigan, maybe they lose J.J. McCarthy next year. Like, what happens with that offense when they lose, you know, Blake Corum too? I don't know. The Big Ten's in a weird spot, but they're getting bailed out by these Pac-12 teams. I will say that was, you know, a great move to kind of expand because if they didn't, you know, maybe we would see the Big Ten start to slide, and maybe they wouldn't be, you know, that power two, you know, in college football.
Or power. I think assuming next season you're going to have a season that looks like the last two and three, where, you know, Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan are all playing these big top 10 games that are kind of propping the conference up. You know, I don't, like you said, if you're not picking up these four Pac-12 schools to make things interesting, and two of them are in New Year's Six games, one of them is could still win the national championship for all you know in Washington. Yeah. You know, I'm picking Michigan, but they could still win the national. If you're not bringing those two in, four teams in, what does the Big Ten look like? And to me, it looks terrible right now. And I can't tell you, apart from Michigan, that it's vastly better than the ACC. And I think in terms of depth, I think it's much worse than the Big 12 is currently. You know, just because, yeah, I think that the best teams in the Big Ten are probably better than the best in the Big 12, especially when you take Texas and Oklahoma out of it. But I think there's more good teams in the Big 12 than there are in the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, it's weird. You know, it's really weird. And I think next year is going to be fun. And the level of competition is obviously going to increase. But, you know, it's, you know, the Big Ten got bailed out, but, you know, they did a good job at bringing these guys in. And I think it's going to be good for the sport as a whole next year. I do have one question for you, though, playoff related, you know, regarding kind of James Franklin. If Penn State doesn't make the playoff next year, this is something that's been on my mind. If they, because you seem pretty confident that they're going to make it. If they don't make the playoff next year, like, is it time? Do you think it's time to cut ties?
The James Franklin, I'd give him one more. If it, you know, granted, I think it depends how it looks, right? I mean, if you make no progress offensively, if it's still a mess to the degree it was this season, if the defense is bad and it does get shredded by a team like Washington at home, then, you know, I think that matters and the optics, and we're not going to know the optics till we get there. But just in terms of his contract runs for so long, you've invested so much in him, it would cost so much to buy him out. And even if you miss the playoff in 2024, it is significantly easy to get there in subsequent seasons. We've seen James Franklin bounce back, you know, from where they were in 2020, 2021. To go from, you know, being a really solid program to having a downswing to coming back, I think that's an important quality in a coach. I would not be there yet in terms of James Franklin, but I might amend that statement if it looks ugly, and if it looks like, I don't know, I'll throw an example out there, the Steelers this season. You know, I think that would be a bad sign. But Seth, I mean, what about you? What do you think on that question before we wrap up here?
Yeah, well, I mean, regardless of kind of if they don't make the playoff in 2024, that 2025 season is going to be very uncomfortable for him if they keep him around. Like I remember 2021, you know, after, you know, that absolute blunder of a 2020 season, in 2021, you know, starting 5-0 and pretty much destroying the season after that. Like, there were talks, you know, and then they ended up extending him. But I remember that was, you know, that was uncomfortable. You know, it was just a different vibe. In press conferences, and I think it kind of, you know, impacted the rest of the roster. That's what I would foresee for 2025 if they keep him after not making the playoff for that first year. You know, I still give him 2 years, and I do think Penn State makes the playoff next year. But 2 years without a win in the playoff, you know, start to think it over a little bit. But you are right; it'll kind of figure itself out, you know, depending on how Penn State actually performs. But that's my take on it.
Yeah, and I'm going to go into it. I'll say that I think they're going to make the playoff because I don't think there's a game on that schedule that they can't win. That they can't win next season. I don't see. There's no Michigan and Ohio State. The Ohio State you're going to get in at home in Happy Valley, I think, is a beatable team. I have said that I think Penn State's going to beat Ohio State too many times to like tell you I think they're going to win that game, but they can win that game. USC looked like they looked like this year. Washington's going to lose Michael Penix. They're going to lose a lot of guys that, you know, and I don't know if we're going to see that the depth from them be able to come back from that. And so, you know, I think Penn State can win every single game on their schedule, maybe more so than they have in recent years. And that's where my confidence comes from. But Seth, thank you so much for joining me all season. Listen, folks, we're going to try to do these podcasts weekly, until, you know, at least through the spring season, react to some portal news, react to some recruiting news, all that kind of stuff. Some weeks we might take off if there's nothing to talk about, as sometimes happens in college football once you get into the offseason. But we intend to do this weekly. We intend to have Seth back and keep going. But I still want to thank Seth for, you know, here at the end of the games and you know, the newsiest time of year, sticking with us all year while you were juggling daily collegiate work with working with the Post-Gazette.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Well, we will talk to you all again next week. Thanks for stopping by. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, please pop a like on this video. Help us out with the YouTube algorithm. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of our videos. And, of course, Christopher Carter, North Shore Drive, all kind of Steelers talk the rest of the week. I'll be back with Paul Zeiss on Thursday. So make sure you check that all out. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.